Hello and welcome back to Molly, a Dream SMP podcast. This is episode 63 and today we're discussing the end of Los Nevados. We're back.
Hello.
Hello.
And there's four of us instead of two.
Yeah.
For once in our life, our schedules actually work out. I am back from, like, deathcation.
Death.
To be fair, we managed to do this because we're doing it a day after we usually do it.
Yes.
And 2 hours before the usual time.
Yeah. So.
Yes. And
that's true.
Yeah. And I'm going to be rushing editing after this, and it's going to be great. This episode's going to come out, and it's going to be absolutely perfect, with absolutely no flaws, and definitely the same amount of effort I put into every episode. Anyways, we had Quackity War. It's the end, guys. It's here. It came.
We also
it's over.
Sand Bucket Lore, but kind of gonna talk about that next week because
yes.
Sweet hasn't watched it. Sabu only managed to get through half of it before passing out.
Yeah.
Has Sai watched it?
Sai.
I have.
Sai and Sweet
watched it. Not exactly live. I like missed the start of it and I just watched. From there,
yeah,
you know, like you know, you can go on Twitch and go to like videos.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Like a stream as it's still going.
Sorry, yeah. I missed the first half. No,
but that's okay because it, you know, it gives us.
No, I didn't actually miss anything. No, I did actually miss the first few minutes of Quackity's stream.
That's okay.
But it was only the first few minutes. Like I was there for chapter one.
But this just gives us a chance
a bit
to, you
to
know,
start with him and Wilbur.
Focus on. Quackity lore, and then focus entirely on Sam Bucket lore, and talk about what happened. Cause something certainly did happen.
So many things happened.
At least two
things. Some may even say more than two things. I'm trying to remember how, as always, we get, you know, proper cinematography from the great artist known as Quackity. Hit artist and rapper Quackity, Los Nevados. We started with a sort of a flashback, which is interesting because I think that's now the second time in the last few weeks where we've had lore start with glimpses into the past.
Reminding us
sure.
of how shitty Lamanbrook really was.
Yeah, because Wilbur's lore started with sort of a flashback, look back at a not a moment that was canon, but a moment that is now canon. Like not something that actually happened during, you know, the beginning of the server, but something that they've now recorded recently and said it during the time period of the beginning of the server. You know how it is. And we learned in something of a retcon that Tommy's the one who named Lamanbrook and how Wilbur thought of Lamanbrook as a representation of Tommy.
It's Fantopia.
Or something
Eurasia.
Like that. Yeah. Similarly, we started with a flashback this stream also to Tommy. It's almost like he's important to other characters. especially characters who have gone a bit unhinged in their pursuits of power. Cough, Quackity. Cough, Wilbur. Yeah, no, it's, but we're back at, instead of the foundation of Lamanbrook. Actually, it's kind of, I don't know if it was on purpose.
It's right before, right when they're about to start their whole election campaign scheme. And after Quackity has been, Quackity has been rejected from Manbrook citizenship by Wilbur because of his nationality. I think he's trying to speak with Tommy to, like, make friends. Like, hey, nationality doesn't matter at Tommy. Tommy, it does actually at Quackity.
Well, it was like, I didn't think about it till just now, but it is kind of interesting that both Quackity and Wilbur started this, like, pre-recorded lore that they did with this glimpse into what could be considered, like, the beginning of their stories, or, like, the foundational mark for their characters and what happens after them. Because with Wilbur, you get naming Lemanberg and deciding that this is going to be a country. And with Quackity, you get the night before the election and setting that sort of, like, what is my relationship with Tommy? And the fact that this isn't, you know, personal. Like, I don't hate you, Tommy, or anything like that. That was kind of the gist of the conversation. It was like, I don't hate you, Tommy. I just... I want to be clear that we can still be friends. I just want to, it's like, this is not a personal thing. And even Tommy is like, yeah, no, this is, oh yeah. Also, anyone who hates Lemanberg, you are so validated because
oh, yeah.
Tommy literally says in this is like, yeah, no, I mean, this isn't anything personal, Quackity. This is literally just for me and Wilbur to consolidate power so we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, literally.
Like, goddamn. All right. I'm sorry, people who love Lemanberg. Y'all got some shady foundations.
I mean, if they love Lemanberg, they're probably not listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they were.
In which case, you are all gluttons for punishment to be here for this.
I don't think there's a single Lemanberg lover among us.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I feel like it's hard to even... be a Lemanberg enjoyer anymore because every day, every stream,
I mean, it depends on how you enjoy it, right? Because of the people, most typical Lemanberg likers are people who believe Lemanberg was 100% good and pure and there was nothing wrong with it and Dream is bad for trying to take it away. Wah! Sorry. But,
I do believe that, like, the initial, like, concept was good, and then it got, like, corrupted over time.
Yeah, I think there's a...
You know, like, there's people who are like, oh, the Manberg died, or, like, the...
Manberg was dead before it even started.
Final control room, from there it was dead, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's sort of, like, this idealization of the Manberg as it was first sort of created, when, like, I'm pretty sure most, like, a lot of the people who think that never even watched those spots.
Yeah, I mean, like... I sort of view Lemanberg as a tool Wilbur used to get what he wanted. Kind of thing. Because it is yeah. Partially, like, his tribute to Tommy, but it's also, like, he's not above using people, he's not above using things to get what he wants. And what he wants was to stick it to the man. Fuck you, Dream!
It's kind of interesting, because in that sense, him and Quackity are very, very... Him, Quackity, and Dream are all very, very similar, in that they are willing to use things for the sake of, you know, what they want,
their
what
goals,
they want to achieve.
Selfish or unselfish.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting. But, speaking of Quackity, and Wilbur, yeah, they both sort of have this... I saw someone else refer to it sort of as, like, dog-eat-dog world, where, you know, everyone's gonna screw you over, which is definitely true. I mean, pretty much everyone in the Dream SMP world will screw you over, given the chance or the proper motivation for it. That's just kind of how it is. There's not much more to it. But, I'm trying to figure out a natural segue without skipping over the majority of the lore stream. But yeah, no, we start with, you know, Tommy and Quackity. And Quackity saying, you know, I just wanted to help people. Or, like, I wanted to make change. And this is, my start to do that. And then immediately we flash into fire! Alarms! Terrible things happening!
Blast Nevada's in destruction and... someone, presumably Quackity, running through it all.
Yep. And then we go into the rest of the stream, and we're not gonna, you know, lay out everything
cool-ass
that happens
card.
In the stream. But, yeah, the title card was great. But yeah, no, so we get this sort of... I think I already said this. I just find it interesting that, you know, the way that Wilbur and Quackity... started off their lore streams with sort of these, especially because these are both streams that are considered, like, the last stream of the season, at the very least, of these characters, and then they both start their streams off from a place of, these are sort of the starts of these characters, let's see how they finish. And in Quackity's case, not much different than how he started. but it's just interesting to see the way that progresses. And then, obviously, can we talk about the cinematography for a little bit? Because, like...
Oh, yeah, it was great.
It was so pretty. It was so good.
I think one of my favorite sequences is, like, the Slime Army one.
Yes.
But also the very bit at the end where it's just, like, constantly, like, panning around the open window.
The open window.
With the two of them just standing
there.
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah. That was really cool.
Because you're just waiting. Because you know it's gonna happen.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like... I think this is the first Quackity lore that was just entirely... cinematography.
Yeah, I don't think there was anything in it that was, like, live.
It doesn't have to be live for me, but I feel like part of the charm is seeing things through first-person mode. And looking through the character's eyes. And also, I'm mostly saying this because I feel like we lost out on some of Dream's character action, like, character body language. Because of that, because we're always switching from one character to another, we never really see all of them from one perspective, and we're not staring at Purple and Dream through Quackity's eyes.
It was much more like TV show and movie like, rather than the way that it typically works with Dream SMB.
Yeah,
which I didn't dislike.
It's not bad, but it's also like it loses some of the nuance of being able to see everything that happens instead of just the cut down, jump to, zoom ins.
Yeah.
Because right? You don't see how Dream reacts when Quackity is speaking or when Purple is speaking until they're done speaking and you cut to him when he starts speaking. So, like, you lose out on some of his reactions. And obviously, because this is Dream, he's obviously going to have his character react to that physically in a way that we don't get from his voice.
Although I did hear, apparently, he was supposed to have more lines, but he was having internet problems.
I know!
So we lost out on some of his lines and stuff. But, I mean, just in general, I think that goes for true for a lot of the characters. Because I think, like, So just to, you know, preface for people who haven't watched it, but if you haven't watched the lore stream, why are you listening to this? Go watch that first, give Quackity, you know, the attention he deserves. But we get a couple different characters, like, perspectives throughout it. Like, we follow, like, it's like a TV show, you know, so you can kind of flip between different people. So we get, like, some Puns and Purple interaction, and, like, lore from Puns' perspective, specifically, I think, during that segment. We get Rambu and Mexican Dream lore that was sort of mostly third person in general, which...
And just, like, just about that, just, like, the fact that Rambu mistook Mexican Dream for Character Dream.
And he got excited!
I was like, oh, am I finally getting revived? And it's like, oh no, it's
so sad. Dude got left behind on his island again, even after Mexican Dream.
And a smile crumb. Just one crumb.
Yes, but it's enough for me! I've
need
been fed.
More! Give us nothing, besties. You just give us nothing. That entire segment was nothing but an Ender smile tease. God damn it all.
Yeah. But we got, like, so we got the Rambu and the Mexican Dream War, which I have interesting thoughts about because I'm very curious. But, and then we got some Quackity perspective. And I think that it was it. I think it was, like, Puns, sort of a third person over Rambu and Mexican Dream, but I'd say it focused more on Rambu. And then we got Quackity, I think, was pretty much the three main sort of perspectives, or, like, the three people we saw through the eyes of. Oh, and Foolish. We followed Foolish a little bit for narrative purposes. But, it was just,
Foolish,
I think it was interesting.
Poor underpaid intern.
Foolish is exactly that kind of character in that lore stream. He's very much the underpaid worker who's just like, why are you shooting off the fireworks? You know how expensive and hard they are to make? Like, those are not, why are we wasting these? Just, oh, poor Foolish. Poor Foolish.
No, also, just the fact that Foolish looks just, hey, why don't we populate Last of Us, quote, recruit more people, quote, and then Quackity's first thought is just making babies. What? What?
That's because Imprint is canonical on the server. He gave birth to Mexican Lemanberg, so he's like... That's why Mexican Lemanberg's also in Limbo, because it actually was like a living entity.
Yeah! And Quackity killed it!
Yeah, so Quackity's first thought when Foolish was like, we should just like populate the like, the country. Quackity's like, no, I don't want to raise fucking kids. Like...
Oh, what a jump in logic, Quackity!
I know.
Why did you go to the fact that
that means
they're kids?
I think it's kind of interesting from like the storytelling perspective that, like, I guess we kind of all assumed that Last Nevadas and like the scale of it was just going to be one of those things that just kind of gets ignored in canon. Mm. But then it actually gets brought up as a plot point. There's really not enough people on the server for it to really work as intended.
Yeah!
I thought that was cool.
I
thought that was just going to be like a suspension of disbelief thing, but then I actually went and pointed out, like, we don't actually have that many people here, guys.
I love the way that they called out that sort of, like, plot hole, because there genuinely isn't. There's, like, what, 30-something people on the server entirely?
Yeah.
Like, that's not enough for a casino metropolis or whatever you were trying to make.
Like, genuinely, I'm sorry, I am such a bad person. I'm lording my victories to all the other people out there who said there must be super secret silent citizens.
There's not! They don't exist!
Fuck you, there is! The canon confirms it! Fuck you! Sorry.
Although it does kind of make it funny in the sense of, like, how with Lemanberg we would end up getting these, like, sort of, like, the Twitter votes for, like, exile or the elections. It's like, how do you make that work in-universe? Because there's, like, I don't know, 10 people in the entire... Like, what is chat? Like, what is Twitter? Like, because... I guess that's kind of the appeal and the, like, the novelty of the Dream SMP, is that it's just kind of, like, nothing, when you really think about the world and, like, when you look at it, for the most part, it doesn't make any sense. Because it's literally just Minecraft, and then you have, like, an audience, and the audience is, like, directly spoken to or asked to do things. Like, it's, like... an example of, like, another, like, big, like, media project sort of thing where that happened, the only thing I can think of is when DC had a fan viewer vote to see if they were gonna kill the second Robin. And in-universe, they didn't, like, give voice to the fact that, you know, they killed him. But on the other hand, it was still, like, a direct effect. And so, like, how does that work in universe is my constant question. Like, it's so
fun.
That would
actually be, like, a kind of, like, interesting thing to do.
What?
Like, have the characters find out.
Oh, that a bunch of...
That there was a vote.
Anonymous tens of thousands of people who decided their fates.
I mean, like, yeah. To be fair, during the elections, everyone could vote, even if they weren't from Lemanberg, so...
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was talking more on cases of, like, in DC. Because that would actually make, like, a really interesting storyline, I think.
I feel like it's that, there's a very popular, like, fan fiction style.
Because, like, they've kind
style.
Of done stuff like that before. Like, that's the whole, like, Superboy Prime stuff, is, like, he's aware of the fact that he's a character who's been written by, like, the DC Comics writers.
Well, I was just gonna say...
And that's, like, really messed him up.
That kind of, like, concept, though, just reminds me of those fan fiction where it's, like, the cast, like, the characters of this TV show are stuck in a fourth-dimensional room with some anonymous...
Stop!
Like,
no.
Omnipotent
those
being who gives
bitch.
Them a book or shows, like, everything that's happened to them on TV so they can see all the shit that each other did. It's, like, that's an interesting concept. It's like that with the Dream SMP, but, like, they don't blame the viewers ever for, like, what happens. And, like, I don't know, it's interesting. Because, like,
it's explicitly, like, a choice for characters on the Dream SMP to, like, invoke the, like, Twitter hive mind.
Yeah.
You know, like when they were doing the elections, they decided, like the characters themselves decided to make it a vote in that way. When Tubbo wasn't sure whether to exile Tommy or not.
It's almost like that one was more of a, like that's not an in-universe vote though. The exile wasn't an in-universe vote. The elections was an in-universe vote.
I am noticing, though, a specific sort of trend between them, which is that it seems to be a power specifically that the president of Womanburg can invoke. Because Wilbur did it with the elections. He's the one who put it out there. Tubbo did it with the exile thing, and no one's done it other than that.
I mean,
like, the closest you get is, like, Tales for the SMP, where you have the votes in chat.
I'm thinking really hard about something. Sorry, Carl, I love you. No, I think it'd be funny. So, like, other servers exist, right? Other areas exist. People outside the server exist within universe within the Dream SMP. Because we have, like, Wilbur talking about being from fucking Utah. Yeah. And we also have, like, CPK's
a dimension hopper.
Who's a dimension hopper, etc., etc. And so, it wouldn't be completely out of the blue if Wilbur literally just opened up the Lamanbrook elections to everyone in the universe.
True, maybe it's... I mean, I don't know what the explanation for it is. But I think it's really funny, though, the way that kind of ties in, right? Because on the one hand, we have characters invoking Twitter as an election site. In the other case, you have people like Quackity, who's trying to run a country built off of gambling and power and businesses, and three people show up, and you know who those three people are? Two people who are already part of the country, and Skeppy.
Skeppy!
Which, yeah, the Skeppy appearance was very random, but on the other hand, I loved it. I was just
if Connor
like,
were alive,
Skeppy
he'd be
there? If Connor was alive, he absolutely would have showed up. That would have been a great place for him to make an appearance. I don't know, it's just interesting to see, like, who... Like, the ways that... I think the world building for the Dream SMP is always interesting because it makes no fucking sense half the time. And the way that, like, how much of it is, like, in the... Like, because in books, like, that you don't have fourth dimensions. It's, you know, the world is the world. The world is a video game. But are the characters aware it's a video game? Are the characters not aware it's a video game? It's hard to say. In fact, it's impossible to say.
Yeah.
And I just find it really
interesting. It's also
interesting
because it's like, so like in World Ring, there's like two main aspects that you have to sort of like pay attention to. And one is sort of like the internal consistency, like the logic of it. But the other one is sort of like the cohesion. It's sort of like how well can you make it so people understand what is and what is not possible in this world. And when there's an exception to that, how well can you explain it without having to, like, make completely new stuff up? What Dream SMP does is it doesn't really do the whole collision thing, but it also simultaneously does.
Yeah.
Because we're aware of the, like, physical limits of what they can do in Minecraft, but then they can also bring in stuff like the egg, which is completely unpredictable if you're working from the basis of just Minecraft.
Mm. Or, I don't know,
so
cloning
slimes.
So creates a
situation where most of the time you can predict what happens until the magic stuff comes in. And then you have to sort of work out, this is a completely different thing. You are the slimes. And we're just going to count them in with magic stuff.
Mm.
And you have to figure out what are the rules this new stuff works on, like learning that how the slimes work. And how they're basically constantly evolving.
Yeah, we're like, it's not even...
Wait, I just realized...
To some extent, it's also science stuff. Because it's the slimes, or like, I feel like category is more science stuff. But also the nukes.
I just realized, the slime is a play on the anime genre of slimes evolving from eating them so much. Why? What the fuck? No, have
but
you...
But like, it's... Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It's the, like, slimes eat, I don't know, like... a piece of fire, and now they're a fire slime. Woo! Or,
yeah,
like
constantly evolving. That's just fucking every single anime manga with a slime in it ever, where the slime just somehow becomes super OP because it's constantly evolving, quote-unquote.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, but I would categorize the slimes more as magic stuff, but that's because, to me, you also can factor in things like the nukes, which in base Minecraft, that isn't a thing. And because, you know, the Dream SMP is pretty much vanilla, that's not really a thing. But you know what happened? Tubbo made it happen. But he Tubbo just sort of hand-waved away how it worked. Other than, you know, like, oh, there's two key cards. This is how they function practically. How we built them? Nobody needs to know that. Tubbo, but yeah. Tubbo. So it's like, but yeah, no, I agree with you. It is sort of like they kind of pick and choose the whole cohesion and the rules to whatever at the time kind of fits their needs. And if it doesn't really make sense, because for the most part, the Dream SMP sort of runs off of, like, real life and Minecraft rules. You know, if it's possible in Minecraft, then it can happen. But if it's, like, you know, something that they have the power to do in real life, like, you know, run a Twitter poll, or, I don't know, commission somebody for a skin or a build schematic, or, I don't know, art or something, they can make it happen in the fan SMP art. In a way that makes sense. Yeah, like fan art or asking like chat for name ideas for a country, because I'm pretty sure Kanoko was a chat suggestion.
It was.
So like they can kind of like hand wave that stuff away, and it's something else, my dude. It's something else. But yeah, no.
I mean, I feel like they do it, but as long. The only big rule is as long as nothing majorly contradicts one another, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Because everything works as long as they don't work. I'm sorry, my brain's not working either.
They generally, I think, try not to contradict each other, but because the way that they sort of make the rules on how the world work are pretty loose in the first place, it's not hard to not contradict world stuff. And even if they do, it can be as simple as, like, well, this is something this character can do, but this character can't because of reasons. Yes, reasons.
Because reasons.
and stuff like that. So it's just interesting the way that works. But speaking of, you know, things that aren't possible in base Minecraft, but they still did it for lore to great effect, Quackity literally made an army of slimes. What the fuck?
No, dude, this is okay.
Also, he made all of them watch the Dream SMP VODs.
Yeah! What the
oh,
fuck?
Oh, yeah!
No, I just. So, like, first two things. One thing, Quackity took the death of his best friend and then commercialized it. He industrialized his best friend's kin.
For profit,
for capitalism. Because his fucking casino's empty, he went like, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna populate it with a bunch of slimes that remind me of my best fucking friend.
He even gave them glasses.
He made him in the image of his best friend.
They even had the same voice.
I know! And then he told them all to die for he forced them to watch canonical DSMP VODs, which I'm so sorry. But also, like, he made them, force them to be loyal, he forced them to die and live and die for his country. Like, they were nothing more than puppets.
Yeah.
And that is just like, and he made them in the image of his best friend. He turned his best friend and everything it stood for into nothing more than a cog in a machine, and that is just so fuck. Aside from the whole slime experimentation, aside from that part, the fact that he turned his best friend into a cog in his grand plan machine, like that, just the memory of his best friend.
It's kind of on brand from the start, though, because
bad on it.
Well, I mean, but is it? Because when you think about it, from the very start of him meeting Slimesicle, he was planning on, you know, manipulating him and using him because he realized he was malleable.
Yeah, but like, all those feelings he developed for slime meant nothing.
Oh, I mean, like Slimesicle himself says, and this is big spoiler territory, he's not a good person. He ruined his own life, and he ruined Slimesicle's life, because before this, Slimesicle didn't know that, you know, humans are assholes, or all of this terrible shit that Quackity taught him, and he didn't go through, like, he didn't know what it meant or felt like to literally burn to death in lava. Like, this is largely and entirely on Quackity's shoulders. I think, like, Slime makes, like, a really good, like, you know, point and argument on that.
Yeah.
And pointing out, was like, you taught me these things, and it ruined me. But you're right. You were right about the things that you said. But because you told me them, you ruined my life.
But also,
I hope,
like,
those lessons treat you well, more or less.
Quackity's not a good person. But also, like, that feels like such... It doesn't... The fact that he, like, turned his best friend into a commodity, it doesn't feel like he's understanding that he's essentially turned his best friend into a commodity. It feels like...
No, yeah.
Like, he doesn't... He understands what he's trying to do, like... He wants to populate Nasavadas. He wants his citizens to be mindless machines. And he gets that with the whole slime thing. But he doesn't look like he even understands the gravity of what he's, like, done to his memory of slime. He's essentially... It's sacrilege.
Yeah.
Right, kind of like that. He's, like, spat all over his memory of... He spat all over Charlie's feelings. He spat all over his own feelings. He spat all over everything Charlie was to him when he started the whole slime cloning business. And he doesn't even realize it. And that's the part that gets me. Like, he doesn't even realize he's spitting and standing and destroying every good thing about his memory of slime by doing that. He's ruined every good thing that he had with slime by doing that, he said.
I mean, he basically took someone who was his friend, and he found a way to commodify his existence. Like, obviously, the new slime, like, the slime people, the slime army that he made, aren't actually, you know, Charlie Slimesicle, but he made them in the same, like, he took what he knew from slime, which was a very, I'm sure, personal thing, and then he forced created and then forced all of the, you know, beings like him to develop and change into the same type of thing. Like, it's not it's not good, bro. Like,
he doesn't even realize it's fucking, like, maybe on some level he understands that's pretty fucked up, but he doesn't, like, understand how fucked up it is to him personally, him and Slime personally, on a personal level. Like, he doesn't seem to get that, and that's like, how could you not see that you just, if Slime were to ever remember anything about you, that you've just ruined any chance of reconciliation you could have had with him.
Yeah,
because
he
decided
just
to do that.
Yeah, it's just not gonna, it's very much a moment of blindsight, I think, because on the one hand, he got what he wanted, which was people who were loyal to Las Nevadas, loyal to him. I mean, weak-ass people, Purple
they
Dream,
died one hit.
Like, clear that army in seconds once they realize how weak they are and they just need some TNT. But, like, he made... it's just the indoctrination of it all goes a lot farther than even, like, Lamberg does. And I think it was mostly played for comedy, and to be fair, it was hilarious. But,
it was so,
like,
funny.
It is deeply messed up, because he basically, I mean, he bred soldiers. Like, he bred and created...
Child soldiers. Literally, child
pretty much
soldiers.
An army of, I would say brainwashed, but they're not even brainwashed. They're just indoctrinated into this ideal... I mean, I don't know if I can say brainwashed, just because, the only reason that they are, like, they weren't, like, something else and then turned into that, it was that
well,
he made them.
They kind of were. It was just that they were
slime.
Kind of.
And then
they
were,
like, they weren't,
into
like,
becoming
different
Charlie clones.
People. They were, you know, it, like, brainwashing to me, I guess, is just you're this type of, you're type A, and then through the brainwashing, you become type B, kind of a thing, which I guess is the same, but, like, I don't know, because they weren't necessarily people.
Just because they weren't people doesn't mean they weren't brainwashed until he turned them into people. Charlie's.
I don't know.
It was more like they were slimes and he was trying to get them to act like humans.
Yeah. Which he did.
But humans that were exclusively loyal to him and did whatever he said. So brainwashing.
Which he did pull off. So, I mean, kudos for that, I guess. But I just... Oh, man. Like, I don't know why you thought that would work in the first place, because... Actually, that's not true, because I thought it was going to work, to be fair. But I thought it was going to backfire on him in a different way than it did, because what I thought was going to happen was a situation where he was going to release the slime army, right? And the slime army, he's basically taught them that they will live and die for Las Nevadas, and the only thing that matters is Las Nevadas. And so I fully expect he was like, oh, I know what's gonna happen. Dream and Purple, and maybe Puns, are gonna roll up, and they're gonna destroy Las Nevadas. And because the slimes have been, you know, created to protect Las Nevadas, and that's all they know, they're going to go ham, buck wild, and basically, like, malfunction, and just start taking over the entire server. Because if the one thing you were created to protect isn't a thing anymore, then where are they gonna be able to, they're not gonna be able to set the boundaries, and they're probably gonna just be like, okay, well, now everything is a threat, so we kill everything. So I fully thought this is gonna turn into, like, a zombie apocalypse of the slimes. It didn't, but that's what I thought was gonna happen. Okay, turns out they're incredibly weak.
I just gotta say, I love how it goes from super dramatic, cinematic shots to just Purple and Dream doing comms like bed wars.
They were so chill about it too. Like when Dream was talking the entire time, every time I heard his voice, I was just like, he sounds like he's like recording a Minecraft video, like the elevator video. He's like, there's so many of them, but it was so calm.
They die in one hit? What?
I mean, I'm not sure. My guess is that they were like just reskinned zombies.
Probably, or I mean, they can code, so it's not hard to make, like, weird.
Yeah, but they basically acted like Minecraft zombies.
More or less, they just followed them around.
Just, like, mobbing around people.
Though, to be fair, even Minecraft zombies, when you're in Nether... even when you're in Netherite, if you have that many of them just swarming around you, like... But to be fair, it's also really not hard to, like, do, like, a basic code to make some kind of, like, NPC... So, I don't know. It could be just reskinned, like, or it could be...
Attack. I mean, it's like Occam's Razor. It's easier just to reskin zombies and add a little bit of code so that they only target.
I mean, they didn't walk like
Dream
zombies
and Purple.
Is the thing. They
that was the other thing.
Yeah,
they were all sped up, so maybe that's another thing they changed. Because I don't think there's any other mob that's...
I mean, basically, you can just start with any of the mob... code and then just customize it to how you need it to be. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's how most people make things. Yeah.
He knows how to code plugins and makes adjustments in Minecraft code like that, so.
Yeah. Wouldn't and if Dream didn't want to do it, then I'm sure they would have just gotten Callahan to do it.
True.
Dream code, or Callahan codes all the plugins and things that Dream doesn't have time for.
Yeah.
True MVP of the server.
CNF splash tag.
Hey. Yeah, that. I'm pretty sure he's probably the one who, like, coded it so that there was, you know, able to have a 1.19 world attached. Like, I think a lot of the, other than, like, a few specific things, like, we know that, like, Rambu's silk touch hands were something that specifically Dream coded while he was watching one of his streams.
Foolish's totem abilities too.
Oh yeah, probably. Mans can still code, of course, but it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I just. Oh, it's so funny. They're so.
The slimes were hilarious. I love that.
Zap me up.
Oh, I didn't. I don't know. You wouldn't have seen this, Snowy, because you're not on Twitter. But actually, okay. So during
he said slap me up, right?
He said slap me up instead of dap me up to show that he was corrupted. The funny thing is, I'm pretty sure I heard when, because so Quackity's facing off with, you know, Purple and Dream, and then Slime turns on him, and I'm pretty sure at one point when Quackity's, like, saying things over the sound of, like, Slime chasing him and, like, all the Slime clones attacking, you know, Purple and Dream. Yes, attacking Purple and Dream. I'm pretty sure you actually can hear Slimesicle go, "I'm gonna dap you up with a sword."
Yeah, I heard that. Oh my god. "I'm gonna dap you up," threatening.
Yeah, it's just... oh boy.
Slime. God, I love Slime's monologue. It was so good. Also, yeah! I just have to say, I was 100% expecting Purple to show at the end there to show up behind Slime going, "What the fuck? Why'd you push me off?"
There's no way Purple died from that fall, not with Netherite. Like, Quackity, absolutely.
Which shouldn't have, but apparently he did. Also, oh, he should have, because you didn't see any items on the ground, and it was not 5 minutes by the time Quackity got...
Well, you've got to do, like, the theatrical components, you know?
Yeah, but I like the Minecraft consistency.
Oh, I think you mentioned on stream that, like, a zombie picked up his stuff.
Oh, did it?
No.
When they were recording?
No, I think that was just me saying... trying to explain why he didn't have any items on the ground, because zombies can't... You'd need an army of zombies to pick up every single item, because aside from the armor, each individual item, a zombie can only carry one.
Mm.
So he'd have to have, like, the full inventory slot full of zombies whooshing by to pick up his items. if he'd actually die from that fall...
I mean, he might have only had, like, the armor and his weapon.
Although...
because he knew he was gonna die, so no point having extra stuff on him.
Although, on the topic of dying from a fall, I didn't realize that was Quackity's second life and not his third life. I thought he was dead.
I think
it was because originally, I think he lost... we were still, like, working at the live stuff, but people thought that he lost a life during the Red Festival.
They retconned it.
And then that was later clarified that he didn't lose life, and his first life was lost to Technoblade. Yep.
Okay, see, because I definitely thought he was, like, dead, and I was like, oh, it truly is the end of Quackity.
Yeah, because I remember after, like, they tried to execute Technoblade, people were, like, confused over whether he had two lives left or one life left.
Yeah, no, I thought he was dead, and I was really confused, and I was like, oh, I guess I misremembered.
Quackity at Foolish District. So, what now?
Yeah! I'm impressed that, like, somehow, like, from what we've heard from Quackity and Foolish and Purple, because I think Foolish actually right now is doing a stream where he's talking about it, how much they talked about was either... sort of added last minute or was completely improv on their part, because apparently what Foolish said during the fireworks bit he came up with, Slimesicle's monologue he came up with, and Quackity had no idea what it was.
10 seconds of silence and then what the fuck.
Yeah. Apparently. I think Puns said that a lot of what he talked about during his segment with Purpled wasn't necessarily completely scripted, and that he came up with some of it himself, or part of it by himself.
Not me gushing about Puns' protectiveness.
But we also know that, like, one of Foolish's lines was literally recorded, like, the day before, and that, or maybe it was that Purple and Puns' part stream. Got added last minute. Maybe that was what it was. Or, like, it was only, like, done, like, 2 days ago. All I know is that, like, it was really, really well done, but it was interesting to hear about how some of it was done, like, so recently.
Yeah.
And sort of last minute. And they pulled it off expertly, but it was just really interesting to hear that that was the case. Because I wouldn't have thought about that after watching it.
Yeah.
Like, I would not have thought that it was that sort of recent. I don't know if... What else happened during that stream that was interesting? Because there was a lot of, like, different things.
Puns.
I feel like we're just sort of, like, yes, puns. Puns, puns is a protective bestie to Dream.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Dream told puns about the torture. Holy shit. Oh my god.
I'm very much enjoying the theory I've seen from a few people that, that puns decided to go and reach out to Purple on his own, and it wasn't necessarily something that Sea Dream asked him to do. I just really love that theory.
Sea Dream tosses out, like, some sort of half-caught, like, he's not even seriously mean, he's like, maybe I should just get, I should try and get all of, Kakadi's allies against him. And then puns just was like, yeah, I can work with that, and then head straight to Purple.
It was just, I don't know, there was...
finds out all the information, all the weaknesses.
It was also interesting seeing Purple and Puns' dynamic, because I think a lot of people really liked the whole mercenary duo, which apparently they're doing, are, like, brothers or something like that, or, like, they knew each other, and, like, Puns was, like, his mentor or something, but it turns out that is not actually true. The two of them know of each other by reputation and the fact that they can both, you know, kick ass, but they don't, like, they aren't close.
They're not, okay, I think they are kind of close, but they're not, like, friendly close.
Well, it sounded like, based off the way that, like, Purple, like, talked to me, which was a lot of, like, you know I can, like, kick your ass, or, like, I don't need help, so why
like
are
they
you
fought
here?
Before.
Get out. So, like, I feel like it was very much, like, they knew each other, obviously, but it was not, like, an actual, like, very close relationship. Because puns didn't come at it from like a friendly sort of like, I know you, you know me, like we have a relationship that I can pull on. It was more of a, hey, you want revenge too. I have a proposal. Wouldn't it be more fun to make him suffer? Like it wasn't from, because there's obviously different ways you can convince people of stuff. And like if you are close with someone and have like a personal relationship with them, you can kind of pull on the, like, hey, you know me, I know you, we're friends.
Well, it's not, that's the thing, though. I don't think it was a friendly closeness. I don't think they were, like, they were, like, particularly nice to each other or friends with each other. I think it was more like a mercenary, co-worker thing. That they probably.
Well, it doesn't even sound like they were co-workers. It just sounded like they both, like, knew each other. Was kind of the vibe I was getting. It was like, oh, we both know each other, and I've talked to you, like, a few times, but, like, we've never worked closely or anything. Like, it didn't seem like a close relationship, even of, like, the acquaintance variety.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's, like, it's not friendly. I was saying, like, they were close, but in a sort of semi-antagonistic way. Like,
I mean,
the asshole
maybe?
Keeps stealing the job that you want to do.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know,
at
it was
the very least, Purple was very agitated, and Puns was also very agitated.
Yeah, that's true.
Not necessarily by each other's presence.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it was, like, by, like, I'm not aggravated or, like, antagonized by you necessarily. They were both, like, Puns was obviously pissed off by the fact that Quackity had the balls to do that shit to his best friend. Like, Purple was just pissed because, you know, it kind of came off as, like, an inferiority complex, or, like, not necessarily that, but, like,
he wasn't satisfied
not, like, a
with the
confidence
revenge he got.
Issue. Yeah, that, and then just, like, he kept, like, establishing the fact, like, he kept saying, it was like, I can do this on my own, I've got this. I don't know, it came off to me more of, like, a...
I hate to bring age into this, but I think it might be something, like, because of the way the fandom treats quote-unquote minors.
Yeah. Well, to me, it was more like, it felt like more like the repercussions or, like, the after effects of what Quackity tried to sell him on. Because, on the one hand, like, Purple didn't fall into, you know, really believing or going with what, you know, Quackity's whole legacy, you know, shtick. But I think there were some, like, poignant things that Quackity said and did that would stick with Purpled, a.k.a. based off of his then interaction later on when he betrays Quackity, of Quackity did very much so remove the one most, like, notoriously Purpled thing on the server. And so I think that very much did stick with Purpled of, like, I don't have anything left here. There is nothing on this server that says I was here. And even if you're not, like, someone with a big ego who, like, feels like you have to be, like, emboldened across the stars, or, you know, just somebody who wants to, like, make a big mark on the world, because I wouldn't necessarily that he, you know, that is his vibe, but, like, I think everyone wants to be, you know, remembered, or at least for people to know that, like, hey, I existed. And Quackity removed that. And I think Purpled, in sort of a very visceral way, in response to that kind of sentiment getting put into him by Quackity, that was why he was so determined when Puns talked to him. He's like, I'm gonna do this myself. I don't need help. I've got this. I'm a badass. I can take care of this myself. I don't need anybody to help me. It's unnecessary. I think it's trying to prove a point, but I think in a way it was also sort of trying to, like, leave his most permanent mark, because a lot of the other, like, events that he helped with, like, he helped the Eggpire, but not really. He helped Technoblade and Quackity against the Eggpire, but again, he was sort of relegated to the footnote. It was more Technoblade that was, like, the main star of that sort of invasion, along with Quackity. So I think this was his sort of way of, like, if I do this, I can take Quackity down myself. I can ruin everything he cares about, and I get the credit. It's all me. It's my legacy. It's what I've done. I will do this, and I will leave a mark on the world permanently. And, like, it wasn't, I don't know if he was planning to just destroy Los Nevadas himself, or if he was just focusing on getting rid of Slimesicle, and that was gonna be his revenge, but I still feel like that sort of sentiment that he expressed of, like, I can do this myself, came from that sort of place of Quackity being like, you have nothing on this server, no one will remember you, and this was his way of, like, well, they'll remember me if I do this, and I don't need help to do it. Or at least that was the vibe I got. I don't know.
I think Puns and Dream probably have one of the healthiest relationships on the Dream SLP.
It's not even all that
healthy.
It's
not, like, healthy, but, like, it's healthier than most of them.
It is. It's the most positive, healthy relationship, and it's not even all that healthy because of how much Dream is holding back on Puns.
Well, apparently he's not holding back as much as we thought.
True. Sobbing, crying on tears in the floor.
I don't know. Overall, I think the Quackity lore stream was a giant success. I have a lot of emotions about character Dream, which Drebbler is just making worse acting. Because all they talk about is the way that he was acting, or, like, how he kept checking where Purpled was, or that he said he told Purpled he would distract the slimes, and he did. Like, he basically took all of the slimes.
It's a pity that content creator Dream was having internet issues, because we could have gotten more
lines. I know. The way Dream was just placing down TNT as he ran off to, like, in defense, he didn't even want to destroy
the house. Also, there is the question, like, was that TNT, did he put that TNT there, or is that the TNT that Wilbur said he was going to put there?
There was no TNT explosions from underneath. He put the TNT there. I was watching very carefully. There was no TNT underneath wherever Dream put TNT down.
Oh, it was a great stream.
The fact that he called for, like, as many people as possible to help back him up against Quackity, too. Like, God, okay, we're running out of time, but I just want to say, who did not make it for Content Creator Dream's Plan C Dream lore video? I'm so mad. We got robbed. Got absolutely robbed.
Oh, yeah. For anyone who isn't aware, Dream on a Twitter space this morning talked about some lore stuff. a little bit about what it's like playing, you know, the villain of the server, or why he got into that role and what he thinks of his character, as well as some things that he said he was originally planning on doing, such as another lore video like the one with the revive book where he kills Vicstar and Laserbeam. And it was going to be about, it was an alternate escape. It was an alternate ending, or...
It wasn't an alternate ending. It was, it's because...
Addition to the ending, I guess, would be the better word. After the prison escape of him... of Puns telling him where Quackity was and him going
Dallas. It's after the... him... He gets hold of the prison keys. It's after that.
Oh, it's after Daedalus.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was gonna... He was basically... It was like a... brief prison type 2. I don't know. I feel like it would have added a lot to his character. I feel like it also would have added a lot to Sam's character. So I am a bit sad that it didn't happen and that we'll probably never get for it to happen. But
okay, quite frankly, I don't care what Dream says. This is canon. This has to, like, if fucking Wilbur can put hitting on 16 as a AO3 fanfiction or a stream slideshow, Dream can fucking drop a Twitter space and say that this plan lore that never got to be done is canon. And it doesn't even have to be, like, done in the time frame it needs to be, because you can just redo the lore, just make the lore video, and say it took place in the past. Like, And you're the author, Dream. You're the author. Use your ability, use your word of God and make it word of God. Like, oh my god, this is, because this is, we were, it's, so raw, and ultimately this doesn't change what happens at the end, but it explains every little weird inconsistency about fucking Wilbur, about why Dream wanted an army, why he was trying to get, why he was teaming up with Purple, why he was trying to get Foolish to turn against Quackity, why he didn't feel safe to go after Quackity alone. Like, holy shit, it explains everything. Everything!
There, yeah, I feel like it adds a lot of interesting context. Also, I'm just a sucker for any time that Dream, you know, shows his point of view. Because I want that. And that's why I'm excited for season 2!
Yeah, I know! It adds context for, like, Sam and Dream's interaction in front of Foolish. It adds context for why the fuck Wilbur was saying about he didn't tell me this. In reference to Exile. Like, when the fuck did they talk? Apparently after Dream escaped from prison number 2. Okay, like, so many things could have been explained. You just have to make a canon, Dream. Don't be a coward!
So what should we do for question of the week?
We could just ask what people's favorite part of the lore was.
Druns.
No, we're...
Druns.
Druns. I mean, obviously. Obviously, our favorite part was the fact that we saw a character Dream. But, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that happened. Or if you don't want to talk about Quackity's lore stream, you can also talk about what your favorite part of the Sam Bucket stream was, because that's what we're going to talk about next episode.
Week.
So we can, you know, use some of those answers and questions and stuff. If we can't get together, some of us can stream or something. I don't know.
All right, bye.
Bye!
Well, thanks for listening to the 63rd episode of Mile High, and we hope you enjoyed it. If there's any topics you'd like to hear us discuss, feel free to leave a comment or find us on Twitter at Mile High Podcast, where you can also ask us questions or just get updates about new episodes. We also have a Discord server that you can find a link to in the description. See you next time!